You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Hen Day built. Join us, Tom. How you doing?
Jason Greger, I am in good spirits today. It was a nice weekend and fun little time at the rink today, so no complaints. No complaints at all.
Before we get to the orders, I want to talk about Brooke Henderson winning her, and basically, you know, she just ran the table. She dominated the whole weekend from start to finish and wins her 13th LPGA championship. She's only 25 years of age. Is she going to double the, do you think she finishes with more than 25 titles?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I think she's the best Canadian pro golfer of all time, you know, just in terms of success. And she's done it at a young age. And listen, we're starting to produce a lot of really great golfers, PGA, LPGA. Man, you can't deny. I don't know if dominance is the right word to describe Brooke Henderson, but she's usually week in, week out, right up there. Yes, she has her off weeks here and there, but I think she's done nothing but carry the mantle on the female side of things proudly and with a ton of success, and then just overall with a ton of success and proudly for the old Maple Leaf too. So it's been a treat to see her do what she's been able to accomplish. And yeah, I think she's off to a great start at the tender age of 25, and she's only going to continue to you know, break records, shatter them when it comes to Canadian professional golf. So this is someone that we can look at and applaud. And she's also, by the sounds of it, an exceptional human being too. So Greg's just maybe the thing that sucks about all this is the LPGA and Brooke Henderson don't get the attention or more attention that it might deserve.
You know what? I think they've gotten a lot more than they have in the past. But yeah, there are times you'd like to see Brooke more. I was able to watch it though, so that was nice. My father-in-law is a huge golf fan. Well, really Brooke Henderson, because the you know, they're like, I think it's his I can't remember what cousin is. Anyway, they're cousins, and you know, her grandma and his mom were siblings. So he's or maybe her great-grandmother. I think it might be great-grandmother. Either way, he always updates me. If I miss any of Brooks around, he's always letting me know. So it's it's fantastic. The Edmonton Oilers, Tommy. Did you know that the Edmonton Oilers were the only franchise in the NHL who does not have a 7-game win streak in the last 20 NHL seasons?
Yeah, I did, thanks to you. I believe you and I were discussing it over lunch even a couple of weeks ago or a few months ago when the Oilers were riding hot with that 5-game winning streak, and then it came up again today. I like their chances of getting a 7-game winning streak this week and maybe extending it to 8. I mean, they should in theory, but it says a lot about the last 2 decades in Oilers history. And I guess it also speaks to how tough this league can be. But they have put themselves into a great situation here. The 6-game winning streak has been impressive considering the level of competition and the types of wins that this team has pulled off. I know it started off with those 2 games against the California teams. But, man, even the win on Saturday, like, they took care of business. Vancouver had some moments. They were playing for Bruce Boudreau. That situation in itself, we talked a lot about on the pre- and post-game show. Horrific look for the Canucks, by the way. I'll just throw that in. But great chance here for Edmonton on Wednesday. Let's see what happens tonight with Columbus and Calgary. I'll keep an eye on that game. But, Greg's, I know that's a stat that you've brought up and you and I have discussed with the Oilers not having a 7-game win streak. Speaks to how poorly the organization has performed in the last 2 decades, and then now a chance to, you know, put that in the past and maybe forge ahead here in the right direction.
The Oilers, hey, they couldn't ask for a better schedule if they want to go on a run. There's no doubt about that. But it's not just, it doesn't matter who they're playing lately, they're dominating. The Edmonton Oilers are first in the NHL in goals since Christmas. They are fourth in goals against, Tommy. And you got to, like, this team was 25th or 6th for the first 35 games. It wasn't even, like, not remotely competitive. And they've completely turned it around specifically at 5-on-5, but obviously even their penalty kill is now over 82% since Christmas. Like, I want to ask Zach Hyman about it. He says, well, you know, it starts with good goaltending, and then it builds it out from there. Guys have confidence, and, you know, you have Skinner and Campbell right now, and it doesn't really matter who's in goal. Both are playing well, and every night give the Oilers a chance to win.
A lot of people probably breathing a sigh of relief, especially with Jack Campbell's game coming around. I talked to Jack a little bit today. He's in very good spirits. And you know what, Greg's like, not that he's ever really a guy that has a dark cloud hanging over him, but I, you know, when a goalie's going through a tough period and trying to tweak his game, going through everything that Campbell did over the last month and a half, you don't really want to bother him too much. But now it's a complete 180. He's in great spirits. He's getting the performances he wants. I think he's probably in a really good headspace, at least talking to him today, it seems like, and rightly so. It's been backed up by good performances and solid wins. And you're right, like, the team defense, something that we thought, and rightfully so, was an issue, has been cleaned up to a certain extent. You're getting those saves. The blue line, which, you know, was a big question mark, and rightly so as well, has not been picked apart by the fan base. People have tolerated it. I think they would agree that it's been adequate of late. And now this team is starting to kick it into high gear at the right time. You mentioned the strength of schedule or lack thereof for this team. They need to take advantage. All of these things are culminating at the right time, which is good, and I think it's reassuring. And, you know, Jay Woodcroft talked about it today. He said they planted the seeds a few weeks ago. Okay, if you want to believe that, sure. But that's a coach talking up his team. But I think, you know what, in their minds, they finally understood that they're running out of games and they couldn't waste any more points. And they started listening and paying attention. And the focus and attention to detail has gone up through the roof, I think, in this last couple of weeks here.
Donald Gazzola joins us at Sports Center TSN 1260. And, Tom, you look at... You know, the lines, they've been a mismatch, different guys playing with different guys. The Hyman, Nugent, Hopkins, McDavid trio was together lots in Vancouver. They were very good then. You know, you've had Nugent, Hopkins, Costin, Janmark have played pretty well. Now, they had a rough start, but in their last six, seven games together until Janmark got sick, they were very good. Janmark, it was on the ice today, so I'd expect he's over his illness. He'll be ready to go by Wednesday. Evander Kane is at his bankruptcy case, but they expect him back on Wednesday as well. So they stick with 11-7. They're going to have to make a decision then on who's the healthy scratch, right? Like last time there was a healthy scratch, it was Jesse Puljujärvi, and he was scheduled to sit out a second time, but then Janmark came down with the illness and didn't play, and then he's played the last two. Is it as easy as to say it's going to be Puljujärvi, or have you seen anything over the last few games that suggests it might be someone else?
I think it is as simple as saying yes to Puljujärvi. Obviously, time will tell. Because today at practice, we saw Costin and Janmark together again with Nugent Hopkins between them. I know there was a few variations just because, like you mentioned, you know, Kane's away and they need to mix Hamblin in there as well. So it looked more like the standard 12-6. But I don't think that's going to be the case when we see this team play Columbus on Wednesday. I think that the way Derek Ryan and the way that Warren Fogle have been playing of late, even Dylan Holloway, he's been very active. He's been collecting points. So too have those other two guys that I mentioned. And, you know, I think it's safe to say it'll probably be at Puljujärvi coming out. We'll see at the morning skate or maybe even tomorrow at practice. But, you know, Puljujärvi's been all right when he was re-injected to the lineup for the couple of games that Janmark's missed. But that's a good thing, but I think it will likely be him as well, because I don't know if he's done a ton to stay in the lineup over the last couple of games as opposed to those other guys. So that's just my take. Some people might not like it, but they had a good thing going when he wasn't playing, and it's nice that he stepped in and held the fort for the time being. I think he was just a placeholder, so when Kane comes back, Janmark comes back, it'll just be 13 and orange and blue coming out.
Tommy, there is some talk that we saw there was scheduled, if Buffalo had won, that the AFC game would have been a neutral site game because of an uneven number of games played and that Buffalo would have played one fewer game. There's talk, Albert Breer had an article today about that it's not far-fetched that the NFL might look at AFC and NFC championship games in neutral sites. What do you make of this?
Huge money grab. Let's start with that.
Yeah, it'd be disgusting money grab.
Yeah, and the way they can, and Albert Breer, the way he described it, and you go, why? That sounds so ridiculous and counterproductive, and like, does it not take away from a really successful regular season where you earn home field advantage? I think it does. But from an NFL standpoint, and as soon as the owners get involved and they start talking about the revenue potential, think of it this way. College football bowl games and the sponsorship naming rights to those, like, it's huge, right? Like, it's a massive money windfall. So they could put a sponsorship tag on the AFC and NFC championship games. They would be able to sell the suites and all the corporate level elements within the stadium, the broadcast rights. They would have the individual teams and cities bid essentially to host those games, and it would open up cities and stadiums that don't generally get considered for Super Bowls an opportunity to host a championship game, whether it's the NFC and AFC game. So I think it would be a huge cash grab. Money is king in the NFL. Just when you think that the league doesn't have any more ideas how to make more money, it'll find a way. So Albert Breer, even though, you know, you read the headline, you're like, that is so ridiculous and probably not going to happen. And he goes into it. They've already discussed this, Greggs. And the fact that they had to plan out a potential neutral site game if the Bills had won, and they kind of worked out, it gave them like a test run to a certain extent, that this might pick up some steam and actually become a thing. I think it takes away from if you had a great season and you wanted a home field advantage going into the Super Bowl, completely gone. All for the sake of the almighty dollar, which shouldn't surprise us one bit anymore.
Yeah, like that would be awful. Imagine a fan base. You're a season ticket holder. You're there earlier, and that's like now the biggest game is here. Oh, sorry. You want to pay 10 times to go to some other city across the country? Great. Like, absolutely. It would be the biggest kick in the junk. And honestly, if I was a season ticket holder, I'd be like, well, I'm not going to games anymore. Like, at some point, fans have to take a stand to the lunacy and the money grab and say, no, hey, you guys don't care about us when it matters. You only care about us to buy your – now, I know people say, well, Gregor, the NFL can have no fans and they still make money. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But they would still lose lots. And trust me, no fans in the stands. The atmosphere of the games is not nearly as good. Trust me. Every player talked about it during COVID. It was the worst.
Yep.
The worst. With no and players, you know, to their credit, they're like, yeah, you know what? Dude, maybe they've taken fans for granted. Now, like anything in life, maybe 10 years down the road, they might be like, oh, yeah, fans. Someone will grumble. And then some wise person would be like, oh, yeah? You want to have no fans in the building? Ask the guys in COVID. Ask Tampa Bay how it was to win a Stanley Cup championship without fans. And while, yeah, it's great, they still celebrate, it's not the same.
No.
It was never awful. Mind all the other games or the regular season games that had no fans. So I think it would be an abomination for the NFL to do it. But I'm with you, Tom. I wouldn't be surprised because money talks for these leagues. Money talks. So. And what's, like, it lessens the incentive. Like, why would you blow your brains out to finish first? Other than just so you can have one home playoff date?
Right. It seems so silly, but it might be a reality. If they're already talking about it, and if the owners get involved, like Albert Breer mentioned, this might be already down the path further along than we thought behind the scenes.
Tommy, have yourself a great day.
You too, Greggs.